the full tank, and they generally blow at least the cap, the screw-on cap will be the color, the clue as to what's in it. You know, it's the cap that protects the neck of the bottle. And don't get confused about the dual state of carbon dioxide going from a solid to a gas. That's only under one atmosphere. So. K2RIW, K2J.
So I guess the temperature, at room temperature, is beginning to sound like there is no reasonable pressure at which CO2 would be in solid form. So it sounds like it's always going to be in liquid form in a pressurized tank at room temperature. I think when you allow solid CO2 to turn to a gas, which is it's skipping the liquid phase, I think that gives you a temperature like something in the vicinity of minus 70 degrees centigrade. Does it sound reasonable, Paul? Correction, Eric, K2EJ, K2RIW?
Minus 77, then.
Minus 77, probably C. Over to you, Eric.
There you go. By the way, at the transition state, if you put it in a closed container, there is an equalization pressure. I don't remember what it is, but it will become, as it expands, you know, as it makes its transition state, you get a static pressure.
So, I'm guessing there's no way that we can see carbon dioxide in the liquid form in a beaker in a laboratory. It's going to start off, in some cases, as a solid, which is going to sublime directly to a gas and skip over the liquid stage, unless you had an extremely high pressure beaker, and I guess in glass that probably doesn't exist. Does that sound right, Eric?
Well, consider this. Liquid nitrogen comes in what we call a Dewar flask or a Dewar bottle. The gas itself that's given off because the bottle breathes stays in one atmosphere. That's why if you look at, in the city occasionally you'll see a liquid nitrogen bottle on a street corner cooling down some stuff for Con Ed. You'll see that it vents, so. As far as carbon dioxide, you know, I don't know the answer to that, but I suspect, because I mean, you will see trucks that say liquid carbonate, and it's liquid, and it's under pressure. As you release it to go to one atmosphere, I think, I'm not sure, but the transition state is probably very quick, that you couldn't possibly pour it into a beaker.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, many of us who have done cryogenic measurements, we've used liquid nitrogen. Liquid nitrogen boils off and cools the whole container to 77 Kelvin. So we don't yet know what temperature carbon dioxide evaporated, subliming directly into the atmosphere, what temperature it goes to. Maybe Glenn's going to tell us. You got it, Glenn. K2RIW.
Yeah, it is minus 77 is the CO2. The liquid nitrogen is much colder. But the interesting thing about the tank, in other words, whether it comes out as liquid or whether it comes out as gas, is the aperture up on the top. So in other words, depending on the fittings that are on the top of the tank, determines whether you can get out liquid or whether you can get out gas. Like sometimes we'll get tanks delivered and tanks come in, valving in the apertures up on the top. One side will say liquid, the other side will say gas. So depending on which side you hook up with the gauges on either side, you can get the liquid or down. K2QID.
By the way, the liquid has a tube that dips down to the bottom, and you have an adjustable valve so you can control the pressure.
Right on.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the siphon that Jim was telling us about earlier. So if you got a siphon tube going to the bottom of the tank of possibly CO2, you can get liquid CO2 out of it, is what I think you guys are saying.
Same also with liquid nitrogen, Dick.
I've seen liquid nitrogen in a Dewar cooling down a resistor for a hot-cold noise source. I've never seen liquid CO2. Liquid nitrogen looks clear, and it's always bubbling, and it's always got, you know, fog over the top of it. Have any of you guys ever seen a beaker or a Dewar of liquid CO2? If so, what does it look like? Is also a clear liquid? Anybody want to answer? K2RIW?
It really never quite goes into a liquid unless you hold it contained some way. Usually it starts looking like a snowball.
So I know this much, that there's been a sight glass on the liquid carbonic truck as they load the tank. It looks like a clear liquid.
Well, that sight glass in a tank is under some ridiculously high pressure. And whether or not you could have liquid at atmospheric pressure at room in a room temperature environment, I'm not sure any of us have ever seen liquid nitrogen in a Dewar. K2RIW? Liquid CO2.
It almost instantly turns to frost. It almost goes, I guess, to what you call a dry ice kind of but usually when it comes out of the tank like that, it looks more like snow or frost.
I've seen that effect. And for all I know, it's cold enough that you're seeing moisture from the air being frozen, making that frost. That frost that you see, is it really frost of CO2, or is it frost of freezing the local atmosphere? It's an interesting question.
And Dick?
Hey, John.
Well, Dick, as you know, if you work with Freon, if you turn the tank upside down and open the valve, you can get some liquid Freon out of it. But if you take a CO2 fire extinguisher like I have in my lab, you turn it upside down, you won't get any liquid out of it. It'll come out as a gas.
When it comes out upside down, doesn't it come out as sort of a fog, John?
Yeah, both positions, upside down or straight up, it comes out as a gas, and it looks like a cloud, and you may get a little ice particles here and there, but, yeah, I've never seen it come out as a liquid.
Deputy Serato.
Go right ahead, Jim.
CO2 in a tank is 700 psi. When you crack the valve, you are getting liquid. It stays liquid in the pipe up to the nozzle because the pressure stays above 700. As it hits the atmosphere, it turns to dry ice or vapor. But a lot of it turns to dry ice as it cools, and that white powder is dry ice. It's solid CO2. Guys who have access to extinguishers on a cold day, hot day, take a garbage bag and a case of beer and you discharge the extinguisher into it. And you just, 10 pounds of CO2, you probably get 4 or 5 pounds of dry ice. The rest goes to vapor and it'll cool the beer very quickly. That sight glass is probably under 300 psi because I think they refrigerate the truck. And if you, I'm going to trip the timer. A company that might use CO2 in their food prep, or they just need a lot of it, they have a bulk tank, 4, 10, 12, 20 tons of it. It has a refrigerator, and it turns on and off at about 280 psi. And that is slightly below zero Fahrenheit. They refrigerate the CO2 to maintain the pressure. Keep the pressure down. When the refrigeration fails, they have three different safety valves tripping at different temperatures to vent off the vapor. But it's only that refrigeration truck is probably running refrigeration. It was probably filled with zero Fahrenheit gas, and they're probably running 300 psi, my thought. But you won't see the liquid unless you get it to 700 down. If you put 700 psi at 70 Fahrenheit, you will have liquid CO2. If you don't have the pressure, you will have vapor or you will have dry ice.
You know, that sounds right, Jim. I do remember taking the tubing out of the CO2 tank, aiming it into a container of some kind, and opening up the valve on the top of the tank. And I did get what Glenn is calling snow. The more I think about it, I think I was really getting a fluffy kind of dry ice in that container. Great stuff. I've got to leave you guys. Don't keep smelling all these gases. Bye-bye, you all. Take your eyes up, you're clear, but listening.
Dick, would you mind to respond to one thing? You were mentioning that only heat is the known factor for the body. How about the current and voltages in the body? Because it's a dipole.
non-thermal effects to, boy, I'm terrible.
Leslie.
My mind's going blank. Oh, who's this guy in, 2XJN? Never heard of him. I have been reading these articles and references and whatever of the American National Standard Institute report, and a lot of those experiments were looking for non-thermal effects. On a few occasions, they thought they saw some non-thermal effect. But when another laboratory repeats the same experiment, they don't see it. So, from what I can tell, 99% of all the data that's been gathered says that when RF energy hits a human being at reasonable power levels, you know, in the vicinity of the maximum permitted exposure, you get heating, but no other effect. People have thought they're going to see changes in body chemistry. And yes, when you heat living material, so with careful measurement, you think you can see some changes in chemistry. And whether you do that heating with a convection oven or whether you do it with RF energy, I don't think matters. So it looks to me like most of the literature will say the only measurable effect at reasonable power levels, power flux density levels, is thermal heating. Over to you, Wes, KQRIW.
Thank you very much for that. Well, I see that when I have a light bulb with a piece of wire next to the antenna or the transmitter, I could even have a 100 watts lighting full brightness just because of the induction or because this acts as an antenna. So we say that the body can react as a dipole in different parts of the body and is conductive. We also deal with the voltages and currents. I'm sending you the email, John and Roy and Glenn. I have that article, I have my questions. I would appreciate if you find the time, maybe next week, to discuss it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, if I hold my hands out left and right, I don't know the exact number. Maybe I can make a resonance happen at 90 megacycles. Straight up and down, my first resonance is 70 megacycles. If I hold my thumb and my pinky out, I guess I could create some resonance at, maybe 100 megacycles, 150 megacycles, maybe 200. And the material in between my thumb and my pinky held out like that is this very lossy water material inside of my hand. Yes, it's a dipole. Yes, it's conductive, but it's a very lossy conductive material. I'm not going to have a very high Q dipole. For me to put a whole lot of energy into my hand held out that way, because it has a dipole, you're not going to get a great multiplication because the material is so radio lossy. Water is almost a perfect dummy load, and my hand has got a high percentage of water. Over to US, KQLAW.
That's a good point. It's a good point. The guy just sent the email for you for your review. I would appreciate if you think about it. But every dipole conducts the currents and the voltages, and those could be very much significant. Also, from the article that I gave the link for, let me know if the link works. There is also mentioning about a non-resonant object creating response to the radio waves, and there is a 20 or 28 watts per kilogram that is critical for the human body. But again, it is up to the law of square of the distance, inverse law, whatever.
Yeah, you're talking about the inverse square law. I think the maximum radiation that's allowed from a cell phone in the United States, I think it's 1.6 watts per kilogram.
Yeah, but the article says about 144 megahertz, it's a 2 meters band. That's what is interesting, but also it says that the findings are valid up to 900 megahertz. That's what it is.
But 1.6 watts per kilogram if you rate that into other units, milliwatts per square centimeter, or so many watts of effective radiated power at a certain distance, it's really a fairly low amount of power. I think they calculated 1.6 watts per kilogram because it creates an amount of heating. I don't know the exact number, but if I had to make a guess, it's in the vicinity of 1 degree Fahrenheit of heating of normal human material with normal blood flow. 1.6 watts per kilogram, that's the rating in number, 1.6 watts per kilogram, but it's actually evaluated in milliwatts per cubic centimeter, or per gram, milliwatts per gram, and it's really a rather low amount of power. There's a lot of safety factor built into that factor. There are people who think cell phones are dangerous, and they're creating brain cancers, and lots of studies have gone down that particular philosophy, and they haven't really been able to give very much evidence of that. We've now had cell phones for what, 20, 30 years, and I don't think you can see a increase in brain tumors because of cell phones. That's a very difficult thing to confirm, KQRIW.
Hey, can you let me, I sent you the email.
I'll go to bed.
I'm waiting for Dick to check if the link works. You've got the same email. I have a few items to pick up. So I'm gonna take the car from Ilya and probably I'm gonna have some fun driving.
Okay, so you made that appointment for pickup. Very good. And you're gonna take care of that tomorrow. That's a nice day trip.
I don't have the answer for tomorrow yet. I'm gonna know in the morning, so then I decide. And in the meantime, I have a few friends in the house and they're Christian, so they want to have the Christmas party. I mean, it's a beautiful time. I had my Hanukkah, now they're gonna have a Christmas time. Beautiful. Enjoy seeing you.
Gonna have to be there a while. The Christmas is the 25th. Yeah, today is, let's see, Monday, that's the 21st today, I think.
Hey, if I know probably, I'm not sure, I'm not Christian. It's probably Wednesday evening. It starts. Enjoy seeing you.
23rd, no, Thursday evening, it's the 24th, I think Thursday's the 24th, so, you know, that's when they have the Italians celebrate the night before with the meals and everything, so, yeah, that's a lot of fun.
Shut up, go to bed.
Have you been able to open up the link? Is it working? Okay. John, actually, the questions that I had, I think it would be good if we talk about it also next week on the segment. In the paper, I assume that the human body is a receiver. Antenna resonating with infinite number of wavelengths when measuring body organs and tissue cells. So the subject of concern was the dipole of the receiver, which would be our body, conducts currents and voltages induced by receiver antenna, which would be our body. It's not only heat. Yes, Glenn was right, Dick was right, you were right. Photons of RF do not accumulate, but when in phase, accumulate in an antenna. And that's our body. So this could be changed to heat. Also, antenna that receives signal can also irradiate energy, causing the secondary radiation of RF energy. It's nothing puzzling in it. Take a Yagi antenna. And it's connected, I believe. In the paper, there is a finite power and frequency. They actually took one.
Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, code number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, code number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Contest announced the wrong woman for the winner, which I'm
I'm not sure how that happened, but I'll bet it didn't go down well.
Gee, look at who it was. It was Steve Harvey. We all know that Steve Harvey has a hard time reading things on cards that are handed to him. So he gave it to Columbia when it was supposed to be going to the Philippines. Oops. Oh well, another one for the history books.
I guess. Well, you know, Columbia, Philippines, I can see how someone could make that mistake. Well, no, maybe I can't. Anyway, are you also mobile headed in this morning?
Yes, I am, as it should be. Just rolling past the repeater site now.
Okay, well, I'm just waiting now. Things are actually opening up a little, so maybe it will be. I know I started this gig back last March, and I did notice during the summer everything lightened up, and then it crashed again when schools opened up again. I don't know. I didn't know that schools were like the largest industry in the city that controlled how much traffic was going, but I guess it is. So now the holiday weeks are the best weeks to be going into work.
Yeah, well, what can I say? There's just this whole, I guess, migration. That's a good word. This migration of teachers who drive their vehicles to work, and they cause a majority of the early morning traffic because they're in such a rush to go teach the future criminals of tomorrow today.
Roger, this is KD2KAO. I'm afraid that when I was in school, they were probably convinced I was going to be one of those criminals. In fact, the two teachers told me so. So last week, I received some instruction on the DMR. Could you give me a short version of what is the D-Star? I'm looking at these dongle things, and I'm trying to figure out what you're supposed to do with them. And one of my other buddies was telling me that I should find out about the D-Star. So what is that? Go ahead.
D-Star is ICOM's proprietary digital format. It's a single channel, single repeater pair digital system that uses a kind of a topology like traditional networking where you have your repeaters as the nodes, and then the repeaters are connected to what's called a reflector. The reflector is a wide area connection for other repeaters, so you have regional stuff as opposed to local stuff. I haven't played with it myself. The dongles that are out there, the DVAPs and all that stuff, a couple of guys in the Great South Bay Club play with those, and they've got a D-Star machine, and they're active on that. So I would say if you're really looking for a lot more firsthand D-Star information, maybe reach out to one of those guys on the 146-685 repeater out in Babylon.
Okay, well, that kind of explains it. I'm still stuck in the conventional analog world, when I first started this, so we didn't have repeaters and everything was HF, and now it's just dealing with figuring out the repeaters and the repeater offsets and the directions and finding out that when you make your programming list in Chirp, when you save it and you look at it, it's not quite how you saved it and you got to go back. That keeps me pretty busy as it is at this point.
And to BPN Mobile. Oh, well, then you'll absolutely love, and I underline, underscore, bold, italicize, type, write that down, love DMR, because it takes a great attention to programming detail if you're going to do it yourself. The because there's a lot of parameters that you have to get right, or you have to trust someone else did them right, and you take their programming information and you just slightly modify it for your own identity and then put it into your radio. But it's not as hard as it seems once you get used to it and you understand all the little parameters. But as you're learning the parameters for the chirp program, it'll give you a little understanding of how to set up the other stuff for other types of radio software.
It takes a lot of trial and error, and some of the equipment chirp doesn't handle, so you have to use their programming software, and then you find out that it's not written in English, and neither is the documentation, and just have to trial and error to figure out which button to click to get it so you can read it. But, it keeps me busy and keeps me out of trouble, so I guess that's not too bad. Just getting off Northern State onto Cross Island, going to head southbound, and it seems to be fairly open this morning, so that's good.
Oh, so you didn't get to see all the flashy red lights on the eastbound side on the exit ramp for the Cross Island going eastbound on the Grand Central. Looks like somebody lost it over there. It slowed everybody down. Where am I? Just rolling past the Clearview exit over there. So I was just ahead of you on the highway. Now you're going south, heading down there to the southern country.
Actually, just as I got on heading southbound, I noticed a whole lot of red lights. It looks like a tractor trailer missed a sign and tried to get on the southbound Cross Island. So they're all lined up there with him, and I guess they'll figure out how to wait to get him backed up and get him off of there.
Gotta love the holiday season. People make trips where they shouldn't be.
I wonder what happens when that truck drivers get on the parkways and have to get backed off. I'm assuming they get some kind of a fine, and they probably have to pay for the cops' time to stop traffic and get them off, but it can't be good.
It can't be good. I'm sure that it's an expensive proposition. Less expensive than hitting an overpass.
Well, it's always a testimonial to Robert Moses and the way he designed these things and the engineers that worked with him. But some of those Southern State, Northern State Parkway overpasses, those things are going to be here long after we're gone.
Skibby, come here.
Skibby, what's up, yo? Yeah, they'll be here unless some of the facade stone falls off and kills us as we drive underneath it, which has happened in a couple of incidents. But listen, if you were Robert Moses and you lived out on Long Island and you wanted to keep the riffraff out, you'd build little low overpasses also, so keep the buses. We don't want those people getting bussed in here. Skeevy, over to you, and then you pass it over to MJ. And two, BPN Mobile.
Jim, good morning. This is Skip 2 AM. Clear moment. I'm already passing the Americana Shopping Center, which is hopping already. It was we slide into the last week of Xmas. Now it's not Jack anymore. What is it?
Good morning. After long deliberation, I just decided that fidelity has improved significantly and people can get my first name right, so it's Maury, Mike Alpha Uniform Romeo Yankee. Middle name's still Jack, so MJ still works. There's only a few people in the world that actually call me that, but I like it. So either way, MJ, Maury, I answer to pretty much anything at this point in my life. So I am now almost at Belt Parkway, and things are looking up for today. I might even get in early enough to make some coffee and relax before the crowd gets in.
Well, it's always good to make coffee before the crowd gets in. Nice pot of Bustelo, some steamed milk, you're ready to go. Right, Skeevy?
Yeah, I don't forget the body
are none. What do you think there, Stefan?
That's the pot I hit in the morning at the cafeteria. Come on, good buddy. Definitely, it's nice. No steamed milk, but it's about as close as the Grand Concourse as I could get. Okay. So was it a Robert Moses that parted the seas? Wasn't he part of that war? Michael Texas?
I don't know about parting the seas. There's mixed reviews on Robert Moses. His outfit invoked eminent domain left and right and took people's houses away and property away so they could build parkways. And someone once said that he would invoke eminent domain on his mother's house if he needed to in order to build a parkway where he wanted to. But, he did build some nice parkways and had some nice architecture in there. And like we were saying before, even when a tractor trailer hits them, it's always the vehicle that loses. So you can't say that about some of the other bridges in the area that get hit now and then. Go ahead.
Bridges in Stevie's mouth sometimes have trouble getting hit, but then he's got the Tooth Fairy to repair them.
Oh, bridges here. We don't need no sticking bridges. Where am I? Lakeville Road. 217 at the ExxonMobil.
195 McGinnis Boulevard and Meeker Avenue.
Holy.
Well, I was in Jersey yesterday, obviously cheaper. Speedway that took over Hess pulled a bait and switch. They handed out these little cards that if you use them before you put your credit card in, it dropped the price 10 cents per gallon, which, is not significant money, but it certainly makes you feel better. But that only lasted for like 2 months, and then it stopped, and now they want you to keep using these stupid cards to get so-called points. So I thought that was kind of nasty.
Jersey was 175, excuse me. I was out in Little Falls on Saturday. 175.
I only go to the Big Falls. I don't go to the Little Falls. It almost makes me want to go visit my cousins just to gas up. Here, well, they said it was gonna kind of get lower towards the end of the year, and it seems to be happening. It was 203 in Floridia, and if you drive around a little bit further north of into Palm County or. I was in Broward County. It wasn't much difference there. But if you continue further north, it was, dropped down 5 cents, 10 cents along the way. So I'd say 203 was about the average there, which was nice for Floridia. Anyway, I got to drive the White Thunder on Saturday. I went down to Oceanside. I had to do a 2 dimmer switch replacement. So that was fun. And the heat works good in that car. Maury?
The White Thunder. So educate me, the White Thunder, it's what kind of vehicle, and the dimmer switch sounds good. Go ahead.
White Thunder is an 81 Korvetsky. Yeah. 2 dimmer switches and Sherry Babies with bad, so I changed those out for her. Which?
I had Pepper out yesterday. Took Pepper out for a ride. Apparently, battery got a little leak, and when I went to start her up, she was complaining a little bit, and then it tripped an interesting message on the dashboard, service column lock, which turns out to be a recall that was through 99 through 04. There was a recall. The steering column lock was an electric solenoid that when you removed the key would lock the column. And there were problems where it wouldn't unlock, or if it locked and the computer didn't register that it unlocked. knocked it, it killed the fuel supply. So you could only, like, barely idle. And you couldn't turn your wheel. So, thankfully, I think the recall was done where they removed the solenoid, because you could still turn the wheel when the key is out. But being that message caused me to go spend some time with Google to look it up. On the job key, it's pin 2, DBN, Mobile. Skeeves, over you. And the and Pepper is a plus 3 Corvette. Skeeves?
Interesting, interesting. You know, I do have a computer on the 81, but it's got to be the most rudimentary type they have. I'm sure it just controls the environmental aspect of it, because that was one of the chunk-up years. Still operational. Anyway, okay. The heat works good, as I said. And the full master pipes, of course, add a different dimension to the heating. It kind of spreads it out all over the cockpit, but the heat did work good in there, so needed it on Saturday. It was a little chilly, especially down in Oceanside. It was breezy over there, so going right through you. And, more, you're going to have to get a Corvette now if you want to hang out with us. So, start looking.
It's DJ team.
Okay, I heard that station. Yes, I will think about it. My neighbor Tony, apparently, been into the house I'm in now for 35 years. He's gone through 3 Corvettes in the past 35 years. He's originally from Long Beach, and apparently on Sundays he heads out to Oceanside. You guys probably are familiar with the meetups that occur with the Corvettes, but he's deep into it. There's also an organization he deals with. I think it's Marvel or Marbell. It's a group that's sort of down by the Throgs Neck Bridge, Whitestone Bridge area. But I don't know if a Corvette is in my future, but I certainly like to watch him play around with his. Station calling, go ahead.
Good morning to everyone. Steve, was that a cell number or was that a home number? And for 10 meters, what's the best time to use it?
JC, I got your message. I'm sorry, I wasn't home really that much this weekend near the radio, so I couldn't help you out. Got stuck on a couple of repair items for the YL. 10 meters? It's spotty. You got to follow the propagation report. Sometimes it's very active. They had a contest recently. It's pretty active. I think that was last weekend. But you just got to follow the propagation report to see what's out. Generally on the weekends there's some kind of activity. And later on in the afternoon I've heard it. But again, it goes in cycles. Follow that prop report. Switching.
It goes to Maury Povich.
Maury Amsterdam goes.
Actually old enough that it's Maury Wills most of the time, but I guess, anyhow, I'm just about, I'm heading up to Rockaway Boulevard now, so I'm just about at my station, so I will listen for the rest of the conversation and then silently slip away. I'm going to investigate the Corvette, the 10 meters, I don't know what it's like now. Usually I found it best during the daytime when the sunspots were hot, but you got to watch the cycles like you said. And other than that, I'm hoping for absolutely nothing happening today so I can slip away. This is KD2KAO. We'll be listening for a short time and then clear. And 73 to everybody. We'll hopefully catch you again in the mañana.
Hopefully you're not going to a hospital having a procedure done that you could slip away. Anyway, all right, I'll look it up to see what the best times are. And, Steve, what I'll do is I'll just text. If you're available, you're available. If not, no worries. I just wanted to know if it was a cell phone. I usually get a message back saying it's a landline, and if you pay a certain amount, you could send it to, keep sending it to the landline, which I never understood. But I do get that sometimes, if it's not a cell phone. Steve.
Go ahead, Richie.
Sorry, was too noisy to be heard.
Hello, wait till you're done.
I'm feeling so left out because I'm noisy.
Can you call me on the cell phone and we can talk about it like men?
Can you call me on the cell phone? Let me give you my cell phone number so that we can talk about it offline.
Okay, JC, another outlet, and you're probably familiar with this. If you go to QRZ.com, QRZ.com, log on to that, and they display a little propagation report box every day. Okay, and I think it's updated hourly, so you can see which bands, you know, gives you the SOS report. So you can see which bands are in good shape to use and which parts in really good shape to use. But there'll be activity. Those testing can load up both 40 and 80 with no problem. But I understand your antenna situation for right now, so just follow the report. And if I hear something, if I come back and I hear something, I'll text you back and tell you to put a bug. Okay?
It's a packet cluster.
Is that cluster?
It's a cluster, mister.
More packet cluster.
Okay, sounds like a plan. Thanks.
There are other sites. You got, what's another one? DX Summit. One more, DX Summit. Sierra Uniform Mike India Tango. That's another popular, like, packet cluster, as they used to be known. It's like a bulletin board for DX contacts. I think that also displays the propagation report. So it's helpful. It's helpful in choosing which band you can use and, you know, let you know you're not talking to yourself when, especially when you're testing stuff out for the first time, like you put up an antenna. And you know, you're hot to try to see if it works and there's no one on because the band is dead. That's happened many times to many of us, so check that report.
Okay, will do. I didn't realize that I could get that information on QRZ. I just never encountered it. I'll look for it. And at DX Summit as well. On that unit, what does 10A, there's a 10, and then a 10A, and then another 10. What is that exactly? It's 10 meter, but what is 10A and 10C, I think, in red? How does that work out?
Richie, let me take it and I'll give it over to you. You gotta realize it's an old style thing. It doesn't have the phase lock loop synthesizer. This is all predated to that. So they use crystals. And those selectors go to the various segments of the 10 meter band. So it would probably be, let's see, 10 meters would be like 28,000. Would be A to a certain position. I don't know how far up it goes. And then B would be like 28,300 to 500 or further down. And then the next crystal picks it up all the way through. You know, it's spread out like that amongst three crystals. And I think there's also, yeah, there's an auxiliary crystal selector and I think a SWL selector on there. I just go by memory right now. So I used it yesterday on 75 meters. It did okay. I recently strung up a new dipole antenna. And I got to get it up higher. It's only about 10 feet off the ground right now. It's one of my weekend projects. Maybe this week I'll try and get it up before it gets cold. Switchy.
I could say so many things right now, but I'll keep them to myself. SBBN, JC.
You guys are a riot sometimes. Yes, I only have that 10 meter dipole inside, and I didn't realize that what 10A and 10C was all about. This unit also has 11 meter. I guess it was when it used to be licensed. It's capable of transmitting and receiving on it. Maybe I should put up an old magnetic mount CB antenna on the air conditioning unit, see what I get. Does anybody still use that anymore? KC2TJC, F4ID, Steve?
But still in use. Still in use. You should be able to hear some chat with the dipole that you got set up. You just got to tune it with that pre-selector. You know, make sure you have the crystals in those slots also. Sometimes, depending on how many hands the rig has gone through, the crystals get scoffed up along the way. So you got to make sure that the bank has the crystals in it. I would look at that too. When you pop the top, I'm trying to think that I think it's to the left. No, maybe it's to the right. It's probably close to where the selector is. You might want to check that up. And make a note, or, you know, take down the number of pistols you want to pick with these they are so you know what you got.
Okay.
See if you can all find an old Antron 99 vertical antenna there, JC. Use that for 10 meters.
Okay. I'll, see, I actually have a very old, when they used to actually have bumpers on cars, steel bumpers that is, one of those old clips. I think it was either Larson or Hustler. That's about 7 feet tall, 8 feet tall, something like that. And I was thinking of cutting that down to the 10 meter segment, but it has a load in the middle. So I don't know how that, I have to figure out the math on that one. But with the 10-meter dipole, I was just listening through the bands, see if I would get anything. I'm not transmitting yet at all, because I have no idea how to tune in that radio.
As I said, it's easy. I'll walk you through that. Get used to the other functions, right? A lot of guys have good response at 102-inch width. That with a small tuner to get decent results. You have the EE or EX? I don't remember which one you have.
The ST101 Echo. It does up to 160 meters. Rich?
I got the predate the EB and the EX models, huh, Steve?
And that's how it moves along to the session. They had a bunch of them, and various models had additional bells and whistles and other functions that they put in, and some other modifications that came out along the way during those years. I had the F, as in Frank. Kind of got. I'm not sure if it's the last one, but it's one of the last series of that particular run before the Zulu Delta, which is the more modernized version that had the Mark bands and everything in it. So it's got some good filtering. It's got a high low receiver, a pretty decent transmitter, and again, it'll do all those functions provided you have those crystals installed, JC. So you might want to check and see what you have and don't have, so you don't rip your hair out of your head trying to figure out why it doesn't work. Why am I not receiving anything? Why am I not transmitting? And I am on the hunt, gentlemen.
Video, do all this stuff.
I'm sure there's YouTube videos that show everything.
Yeah, I looked through YouTube videos and I have a rudimentary idea. But the thing is, there is one good video that may not be so good. He has extra equipment that I do not have. I have to figure out what type of SWR meter I should get for this unit. Everyone seems to have that. And they have antenna tuners. I do have an antenna tuner for it. But like I said, because of the extra equipment, after a while, it just doesn't work for me, because I do not have that extra equipment. So I have looked, and it is informative to a certain degree. As far as crystals, I'll look. I don't know what was purchased. I am only the second owner of the unit. It was purchased new. And I don't know what was popular in the 70s and 80s. What bands were used, especially for international South American direction, pointing in the South American area. What was popular back then?
I'm sorry, we're trying to park. I'll be right back.
Almost on the hunt. Live from North Brooklyn, is N2PPN.
N2PPN, KC2PKC. I guess you found a parking space?
Still got another 2 or 3 minutes. Skeevy's the one that's on the hunt.
All right, I'm in tight spot, so I had to use 2 then, sorry.
So what was popular in the 70s and 80s? Because this is when, this was the height of this radio's use.
Skull was hot, cocaine was, you know, the drug of choice.
Yeah, well, again, it was equipped with all the bands. It depended what the cycle was at back then. You know, they've been on the wane. They haven't been as good as in past years, the last couple of cycles. But 10 meters is always popular. And that's also a very, very popular South America band. You always hear them on. So if you're looking to connect down there, again, follow those propagation reports and see what's what. It'll help you a lot to decide what band to use.
Okay, I understand. I'm definitely going to take a look at those. But, yeah, this unit was mainly used for the Southern Cone. I do remember him having a vertical. And he may have had some type of Yagi type antenna, but because of how young I was, my memory is fuzzy on it.
Do you have a manual at all for it? If you don't, I can copy up the 101F. I think it covers a couple of rigs in there, but at least it gives you a good idea how to use the radio. Be a little different from what you have, but you know, I'm sure the tuning and all that is the same. So I'll copy it up. Do you have a manual?
Yes, I have the actual original manual for the unit. And I have the manual for the digital output display. If I remember correctly, the manual covers E to triple E. I guess that was the family of that particular run. I don't know what the extras that the EE or the EEE had, but that's the manual I have.
Yeah, the EEX, and it's just, you know, as the years went by, they added different